Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. I am so glad that you are joining me today because we are going to learn a lot about relationship this day. Our guest, Ms. Darlene Lancer, is an attorney and she is a licensed marriage and family therapist who brings a wide range of professional and life experience to her work as a relationship and codependency expert. She has treated individuals and couples for 30 years and has coached internationally and has written Codependency for Dummies, as well as Conquering Shame and Codependency. Darlene Lancer, it is a pleasure and an honor to have you with us today. How are you doing?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for inviting me.
Truly my pleasure. And, you know, this is a time that I think has come and gone. I probably should have made this request years ago, and that is that you join me to talk about relationship and with a special emphasis on what we are going to be talking about today, something that I think probably a lot of people have dealt with and didn't know it, narcissism. But before we get there, if you would please share us more about your background, talk with us about what helped to inspire and shape you as a teenager, as a young adult, what led you to get your JD, and then your professional experience and background as a licensed marriage and family therapist.
Well, it's a long story with a lot of twists and turns, so I'll try to keep it short because I know your listeners rather hear about narcissism than me. So I started getting interested in the mind and the unconscious at a very young age. I used to plan my dreams, and when I was around 12, my brother was in medical school, and I started reading Freud's Interpretation of Dreams, which was one of his required books, and I just thought that was so fascinating. That would be the most important discovery in the world. I didn't quite agree with Freud, but later, as a teenager, I was reading Carl Jung, and I decided that I wanted to be a shrink. In those days, when I was a kid, a psychologist didn't have the best reputation because they were considered people on the fringe and doing acid and Fritz Perls with all this kind of weirdness. But then as I got older, I thought, oh, I'd have to go to 4 years of medical school and then 4 years of an intern and then 4 years of residency. And God knows if I could finish that, how would I ever have a family? And my mother, who influenced me a lot, said, why do you want to, you're not going to like that. Why would you want to listen to people's problems all day long? So instead, a friend of mine was a poli-sci major when I was at UCLA, and I was always interested in politics, so I became a political science major. Like totally the opposite. And I loved travel. I had traveled to Europe a couple times by myself, and I wanted to work for the State Department and be a diplomat, and went to law school, thought that would be a good preparation. And I practiced law for nearly 20 years. I ended up doing entertainment law.
Interesting.
And not focusing on international law. But I was very unhappy doing that. It's really part of my journey in recovering from codependency myself. And as I got more in touch with who I really was and what I wanted, I remembered that I had forgotten that I had wanted to be a psychotherapist. So it's a long story, but gradually I went back to graduate school and got a master's and became a marriage and family therapist, and I was overjoyed.
So the very thing that your mother thought you would not enjoy, you do actually enjoy.
Well, of course. That was probably what she wanted to do.
Is she still with you now? Does she know that?
No, she died many years ago. But she couldn't understand why I would want to go to law school either. So she said, your brother would be a great lawyer. So I didn't get much respect from her.
Wow.
He thought I should be a teacher or something. But I ended up doing a lot of teaching, I think, in my work. So.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. In your work, you almost have to. Well, I applaud you for having come full circle to your dream and
Thank
proving
you.
To yourself that this is indeed where you belong. And, of course, as we know, relationships are so critical in all of life, and so many go so wrong. And one of the reasons that so many relationships go so wrong is that word that you and I have mentioned already, and I'm so glad you're going to take us into this, and that has to do with narcissism. What is narcissism, actually?
Well, it's a personality disorder, which means that it's pervasive, and it's enduring, and it starts early on. In fact, there's now more and more research into it that is showing that there is a genetic component. So it can run in families, and they found in twin studies a 64% correlation of narcissistic behaviors. So this is just in the beginning research. There hasn't been a lot on it. But let me explain again about a personality disorder.
Yes.
A lot of people have mood disorders.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, bipolar even, or people can go into extreme depression or mania, they still have a normal personality when they're not in one of those stages, or just major depression or anxiety. But a personality disorder, that is who they are, basically. That's what it means by pervasive, and the signs can start, early on.
So, you know, a lot of us have read in the books in high school, you know, about Narcissus. You know, he was cursed to fall in love with himself. He looked in the water, saw a reflection of himself, and fell in love, never married as a result, etc. I'll be honest with you. You know, when I read that in high school, on the one hand, I thought to myself, man, what a terrible fate. But on the other hand, I was thinking, is that big a deal? Is that something that's even really real? So what would be your take on this narcissism? Is this something that's as trivial as I once thought it might be as a high schooler? Or is this something that's pretty serious?
Oh, it's serious. And people have a lot of disdain and anger at narcissists because they can range from mildly inappropriate and disrespectful to really cruel. So it runs on a range, on a continuum. So some people who are, they call it malignant narcissists, border on sociopathy, where they just have no guilt at all, no caring about how they harm people, and maybe intentionally want to hurt them. And lie, and they're very vindictive. And then there's people who are just sort of clueless about their impact on others, and they don't intend to hurt them, even though they do. But narcissists themselves can feel very empty. And the paradox or the irony of it is people say, well, they're in love with themselves, and like the myth. But underneath, there's a lot of shame. And what happens is they have to feel superior, like a bully, and often they are bullies, to prop themselves up, because underneath, they don't feel good about themselves. And there's this deep emptiness inside of them. So they need other people to fill that up, to constantly validate them, to brag about themselves, to even an extreme deny reality if it puts them in a bad light. They're, because of that, they're very sensitive to criticism. So there's some, I can go over the symptoms that are diagnostic. Do you want me to do that?
Not yet. There's something that you mentioned that really caught my attention, and my curiosity has just piqued. You mentioned that very often, no matter how much bravado they may be displaying, no matter how mean they can be, that inside, I mean, and they can portray themselves as being very, very confident people, but on the inside, it's the exact opposite, and they feel bad about themselves. They're experiencing shame. Are they normally aware on a conscious level of what causes their shame and causes them to feel bad about themselves? Or is that something that's so deep in their subconscious that they really can't put their finger on it?
That's the question. I can't answer that. That's on an individual basis. And actually, that would be a good prognosis for somebody who could be helped if they can get in touch with those feelings of themselves and actually get in touch with their depression and mourn and feel. I know of one narcissist who started going to therapy after a divorce. Usually they don't go into therapy because they think it's everybody else's is the problem, and they don't want to look at themselves. But, again, depending on each person, some are more introspective and have more ability to do that. So this man went into therapy, not with me, but I heard the story, and he started having to look at himself and said therapy was hurting his self-esteem. He needed a drink, you know, after the session. So he quit because he didn't want to, it was too difficult to face himself.
Wow, so it was easier for, he concluded that it was easier for him to just stay like he was and essentially remain a mess rather than go through the pain and the difficulty of facing himself in order to become better.
Well, a lot of narcissists don't experience their life as a mess. That's the other thing. Sometimes many narcissists have a lot of intelligence or skill at something, and so they can be successful. Or they may have a lot of friends and very outgoing and extroverted. So they surround themselves with a big social circle. So they may experience themselves as being very successful and beautiful, talented. You know, that's what inspires a lot of people to be around them. So as long as but underneath there's this emptiness, so it's never enough. So they need to make more money, you know, more success, more compliments. It's a hunger that never goes away.
Interesting. So this gentleman, though, you said that for his part, though, in therapy, he began to see things about himself that made him uncomfortable to the point where he got a drink after the session, and you said eventually he just stopped going?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how long. It didn't last very long, maybe a few months or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of narcissists don't experience depression because they're outer-oriented. The people, they may attract someone who's depressed, and they may depress someone else because people in relationships with narcissists often feel drained.
Yes.
Because of the demands they place on their partner, and because they're not feeding the other person, they're being fed. They need constant feeding.
So that being the case, would you share with us what you were asking about, and that is share with us more of these traits, listing some of the traits of narcissists.
Okay. So usually there's a feeling, a pattern of grandiosity that somehow they're so great. Now, it might be a fantasy, or they might brag about how, look at all the accomplishments I did. But to feel very important, and they often will exaggerate their achievements, their talents, and they expect to be recognized as superior, often without the achievement. There's some people who are not so successful, but they have these dreams of you know, one day, or if only I could be on TV, I'd be so great, or if only I had a chance. So they exaggerate their abilities or their potential. Sometimes it's real, they are successful, and sometimes it's just fantasy. And they could be preoccupied with these unlimited success. It might be power, or it might be how brilliant they are, or how beautiful they are, or idealized love, and their sexual prowess. So it's always over the top.
Interesting. You had mentioned beauty and sexual prowess as part of that grandiosity field of concerns for or behaviors and attitudes for these narcissists. We are going to be learning a lot about relationship here. Ladies and gentlemen, again, our guest, yours and mine, is Ms. Darlene Lancer, attorney and licensed marriage and family therapist. And she is really enlightening us today. Make sure you come back when we come back in just a few. More on narcissism.